Good morning. Thank you for that lovely introduction. Can everyone hear me? And I want to thank Luke for inviting me to speak at this conference and for organizing this really engaging conference. I'm really honored to be included among this group of esteemed researchers and to have the opportunity to engage with all of you about these important issues. I always find coming to international conferences, which I think it's fair to say Americans do less frequently than perhaps Europeans. It's just very helpful to hear from, learn about other perspectives. So the title of my talk, or the subtitle of my talk, A Look Across Cultural Boundaries, actually has two meanings. The first has to do with the ways ideas cross cultural boundaries and build on one another. So I'm going to tell a little bit the other side of Ghislaine's story from yesterday, from my perspective, from the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. And the second meaning has to do with what happens, some of the challenges that we confront when we try to apply these ideas to research across cultural boundaries. It brings up new methodological challenges, but also helps us learn new things. So my talk will, I have four parts, and I hope it will I'm thinking that it will take about 50 minutes, maybe a little bit less. But I can stop if we run out of time. So the first part is I call my documentational trajectory, so just a little bit of how I found my way to these ideas thanks in part to several people in this room. And then I'll connect that to the work that I've been doing since then. And then finally, or next, I'll talk a little bit about a current project called the Math 3 C's Project. I'll later tell you what the 3 C's are, but you can probably guess what some of them are. I'm going to discuss some very preliminary findings of that work, but mostly want to give you a sense of the methodological approach we're using, and then I'll share some final thoughts and hopefully have some time for some of you to share your thoughts or ask questions. So yesterday, Ghislaine described encountering my work on teachers' interactions with curriculum materials after I published an article in the Review of Educational Research in 2005. That discovery on their part and their subsequent reaching out to me was also a pivotal point in my research. Since the mid-1990s, I had studied how teachers interact with and use curriculum materials to design and enact instruction, the factors that influence this work, and how engaging in these practices can lead to new learning and new practices for teachers. It seemed to me at the time that no one in the United States was thinking about curriculum material use. I shouldn't say no one, but few people in the United States that were writing about this work. We're thinking about curriculum materials as anything, or curriculum material use as anything but a straightforward process of implementation. Teachers simply pick them up and use them. The primary models we had, like from the TIMS study, suggested that curriculum materials or textbooks actually produce student learning. My research suggested that it was more complicated. And even when research considered the role that teachers play, the teacher was often seen as a mediator of the intentions of the authors. A lot of focus was on the fidelity of implementation to the intent of the authors. At the time in the mid-1990s, mid and late 1990s, the United States was undergoing significant curriculum reform influenced by the NCTM standards, which I think many people have might remember them before the Common Core standards in the United States. And so many researchers were trying to study the effects of these new curriculum materials on student learning. We're interested in how teachers and interpreted them and used them. But it seemed to me that much of this work what appeared to be happening in an under-theorized way. So I was really interested in trying to develop a theory that could help us understand the work of using curriculum materials. So Vygotsky-inspired theories of mediated action, that all human activity is mediated by tools or artifacts, which themselves are products of human activity, seemed to capture what I was seeing in my research. Teachers participate with curriculum materials when they plan. And the product of this activity, the potential that the planned curriculum reflects both the agent and the tool. Any attempt to reduce the account of mediated action to one or other of these elements, as Wirst explained, runs the risk of destroying the phenomenon under observation. This is the essence of the participatory perspective for studying teachers' use of curriculum materials, which is a perspective that I introduced in the RER article in 2005. We must take into account how teachers engage with materials and how these practices are mediated by both teacher and the materials. I was struck by the insufficiency, at the time I was struck by the insufficiency of the English term use. I think I'm going to just add a little bit more here. This is a stripped down version of the model from the 2005 paper. So I was struck by the insufficiency of the English word use to refer to a whole set of activities that I thought of as including selecting, purposefully reading, interpreting, selecting among, rearranging, designing. I didn't have in English a good single word to describe all of those things. So when Ghislaine and Luke contacted me in about 2009, with the help, I must remember, of Kenneth Ruffin, who helped to do a little translating for me when I said, what do you mean by using documentary approach? This was all happening by email. I was struck to find that the French actually had a term to describe this work. It was very empowering. Documentation or documentational work, the notion of documentational genesis also helped articulate the complexity of what I earlier called teacher's plan curriculum. So it just gave what I had been thinking about a lot more sort of life and detail. So that's the sort of a summary of how the connection got started. Subsequently, much of my work has focused on examining teachers' work and what I call mathematics curriculum resources from a participatory perspective. Most of my work has focused on elementary teachers, kindergarten through sixth grade, and these foci, both elementary teachers and curriculum resources, have had particular implications for this work. And I'm going to speak a little bit about particularly elementary teachers. I think a lot of work in math education focuses on secondary teachers. So elementary teachers have particular characteristics and backgrounds and work in particular contexts that place pressures on documentational work that they're doing. First of all, they teach all subjects, so they're stretched across multiple content areas. And I realize that this varies across cultural contexts, but in the United States, kindergarten through sixth grade teachers almost always teach at least two subjects, and if not, four. They often, in the United States and I think other places, they often have limited mathematics knowledge, at least much less than secondary teachers. And so the role of curriculum resources can be particularly important, and what's required to engage with them is, it raises questions about what is required to engage with them. They tend to rely on a primary curriculum program in multiple contexts across the world. There tends to be a main curriculum program or textbook, although increasingly teachers are drawing on other resources. But also, over the last 20 years, elementary mathematics has undergone substantial reform, both pedagogically and in terms of what the curriculum looks like. And so what it meant to teach elementary mathematics 20 years ago is quite different than what it means to teach elementary mathematics now. And so these are sort of important contextual issues that we need to keep in mind as we think about how they engage it with a range of curriculum resources. So the term curriculum resources, we've been using resources for the last 2 days, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the way I think about these terms. My understanding continues to evolve as I engage with people in the room. But currently, I use the term curriculum resources to refer to print or digital artifacts designed to support a program of instruction and student learning over time. The term curriculum refers to the course or pathway on which learners are guided. So resources that attend to sequencing or mapping students' learning over a period of time, such as lesson sequence, a set of lessons, a year of instruction, or even more, are all curricular in nature. This aspect of sequencing is an important part of curriculum resource design, as it proposes an intended learning progression for a particular mathematical domain, and aside, as teachers are drawing increasingly on other resources, one question to ask is, where does the guidance for sequencing go? where does it come from, particularly for elementary teachers? So Jeff Chopin, back in the back there, has identified these learning sequences as a critical element of many curriculum programs that are not always made visible to teachers in those curriculum programs. So in this curriculum resource domain, I include three examples of such resources: student texts or textbooks, which is designed for student consumption, includes exercises, tasks, worked examples, definitions, a range of other student-facing resources or materials. Many curriculum resources also include guidance prepared specifically for the teacher, often referred to as the teacher's guide. I know that teacher's guides are don't exist in all contexts and are used differently, or not used in some cases in some places, but in the United States, particularly because of the curriculum reforms that were initiated in the 1990s, curriculum authors used teacher's guides pretty substantially to communicate ideas and to support support pedagogical changes for teachers. So rather than just having them use a student text or look at what students were being asked to do, information in the teacher's guide was intended to really communicate new ideas to teachers. Some researchers have even, curriculum developers have even considered the possibility that teachers' guides could be designed to intentionally support teacher learning, and have used the term educative curriculum materials to describe describe teachers' guides with that intent in mind. These days, teachers' guides and textbooks are also accompanied by many additional resources, both print and digital. And so I refer to this whole package as a curriculum program. And what, with the availability of digital, sort of digital resources, what counts as a curriculum program or what is included in the curriculum program is increasing seemingly exponentially because it's easy to distribute digital materials. Other curriculum resources, other things in the curriculum resource domain would include documents generated by teachers through documentational work. And then outside of that, outside of the curricular resource domain is what I call instructional resources, and those are resources that are not necessarily curricular in nature, as I defined earlier, but they're intended for instructional purposes, or they could be taken up by teachers as part of the documentational process. So instructional resources might include an app or a task or even anything that that can be brought into a curriculum design, but it is not a standalone curriculum design. So my research on curriculum programs over the last 10 years has focused on understanding components of teacher capacity needed to engage in productive documentational work and examining how features of teachers' guides contribute to this work. In a paper in ESM, Okyung Kim, who is way in the back there, Okyung Kim and I introduced the construct knowledge of curriculum-embedded mathematics, which we define as the mathematics knowledge activated by teachers when reading, interpreting, and reasoning about the mathematical components in curriculum materials. With Okyung and others on our research team, including Hendrik van Steenbroek, who's also here, I've closely examined different mathematics teachers' guides to understand how they communicate with teachers and what they communicate to teachers. And subsequently, Hendrik and I have continued to do this work looking at teachers' guides from Flanders, Sweden, and the U.S. So this gets me to talking about the current study, the Math3C study, which I'll introduce in a minute. But first, I want to return to this picture to point out some important changes that have occurred in the realm of resources. And these have already been talked about multiple times yesterday. So as we all know, over the last decade or more, it seems like remarkable changes in the domain of instructional resources have occurred through digitization and things being available online. As a result, this space, the instructional resource space, has become incredibly more dense. There's been an explosion of educational entrepreneurs and designers and teachers filling the internet with all manner of potential resources made directly available to teachers. Also, with digitization, the possibility The possibilities for curriculum developers are also endless. The comprehensive static textbook has become a relic of the past. Digital forms allow for multiple interactive resources to be layered on top of one another with options of differentiation and back-end analytics to monitor what students are doing with digital interfaces. So curriculum programs themselves are also being loaded up with additional supplementary resources. So it's in this context that the Math 3Cs study takes place. So, did you guess what the 3Cs stand for? The Math 3Cs study stands for cross-cultural curriculum in mathematics. It's funded by the Swedish Research Council, where Henrik van Steenberg, he's the main PI on the study. I'll tell you who else is involved in a minute. The aim of the study is to examine elementary teachers' documentational work with print and digital resources. We're interested in how they design and enact instruction in Finland, Flanders, which is in Belgium, Sweden, and the U.S. We're particularly interested in how they access and have access to various resources, how they use them, the factors that influence this use, and variation within and across cultural contexts and curricular contexts, I should add. So although these concepts are making their way, these concepts of documentational genesis and resource use are making their way around the world, there have been relatively few studies of teachers' curriculum resource work in cross-cultural contexts. Birgit, Gislaine, and Luke have contributed to our understanding in this area. Gislaine referenced that work yesterday. We know from this work and others that teaching is a cultural activity and that cultural scripts are hard to see from inside the culture. To this end, cross-cultural studies enable us to identify and characterize these cultural scripts. In a chapter I found recently, Birgit also raises some concerns about trying to create what she calls artificial equivalencies when doing comparisons across cultural contexts. So these are some of the ideas that we take that we are concerned about in doing this cross-cultural work. One suggestion that Birgit offers to this challenge of creating false equivalencies. The false equivalencies means assuming that things are the same because they sound the same or look the same without really embedding them in their full cultural context. So one suggestion she offers is focusing on anomalous cases, and another suggestion offered by many is to work to maintain the cultural surrounding of any particular phenomenon that that you might observe. So I'll talk a little bit about how we're trying to do that in a moment. So this is our research team. I'll stick with first names. Hendrik what I'm trying to represent with the flags, which might not be the best representation, but is to show where the cultural insiders and boundary cultural sort of alongsiders exist. So Henrik van Steenberg is from Flanders and did his initial research, including his graduate studies in Flanders in a Flanders context. He spent some time in the United States, but has been in Sweden ever since, and he is quickly learning the Swedish context. Tuula is Finnish, but has lived in Sweden all of her life, and went through the Swedish school system. But has connections to Finland. Kirsti and Heidi are both Finnish researchers, although Kirsti has spent a good part of her life in Sweden, and Heidi a smaller time. And then Jeanine Remillard is from the United States and has done some cross-cultural work, but I think I cannot claim to be an insider in these contexts, and Rowan Mashalow is a doctoral student working with me at the University of Pennsylvania. So that's our team that is working together. So we're right currently in the first phase of three phases of this study, and this phase focuses on understanding use of print and digital resources for commonly used programs. We've identified two curriculum programs per, I would use the term region because Flanders is a region and the others are countries. So the problem of equivalencies starts right there. The materials we've identified have a core print component, but they all have accompanying digital components. For this phase, we've done two interviews of five teachers using each program. So 10 teachers from each region, five for each program. The interviews focused on background and context of the teachers, what resources they use, how, why, and their perspectives and beliefs about mathematics teaching and learning and use of curriculum resources. The second two phases of the study I'm not going to talk about at all. I'll just mention that one involves a larger survey, and the third will involve another set of interviews with different teachers who are using more fully digital resources. So here is a list of the curriculum programs selected from each region. And what I try to characterize on the right-hand side is a little bit of how we're describing it. We were trying to at least have one resource that was fairly well established in the context, and then one that was more recently developed. It's worth noting that Favorit Mathematique in Sweden is actually adapted from a Finnish, the first Finnish program. So I've described to you how we made selections, what data how we collected data for this phase. But once we collected the data, we needed to really think about what to do. We had data collected in four different languages. And not everybody spoke all of those. There's not one person in our group that speaks all of those languages, and there are some people in the group that speak many fewer languages than others. We needed to figure out how to do an analysis that avoided stripping the data from the context, but we really felt strongly that we wanted that the work of comparison and having outsiders look at the data will help us identify the cultural scripts that are often hidden from insiders. So I'm going to describe the process that over the last several months has emerged that we're feeling confident about, and I'd be very interested to receive advice from those of you in the room. So the first thing we did was develop common coding categories, and we actually tried them out with some English, I think with some American transcripts, just we used the practice coding to discuss the meaning of the codes and how we were interpreting them. Then we were thinking that we should translate the interviews, but we decided not to. What we ended up doing was cultural insiders used the coded their own interviews, and we're still in the process of doing this, but coded their own interviews in their own language and developed descriptive cases of use teachers' documentational process, including images and supporting quotations, and wrote them in English. Translated them in English or wrote them in English. And we had a set of categories, shared set of categories around which those cases should be developed. Then the team together read and discussed a case one at a time, and collectively we identified what needs to be further described. So we, in those discussions, which was really an important methodological process, we asked questions, asked for clarification, tried to make connections to a previous case that we had discussed, the previous work. And this helped us surface taken for granted features and additional approaches that we needed to then bring back to the previous cases. So this is a kind of a cyclical process where we when we read, naturally make comparisons to the other contexts and interviews that we've done. And these discussions, which happen every week through video conferencing, a way that technology has enhanced research, cross-cultural research, we have been able to really collectively identify a lot of taken-for-granted features of each case that the author might have missed due to familiarity. That process then the authors go back and make revisions to the particular case. And so with each discussion, we develop additional guidelines for what needs to be what we need to include in the case. So also through this process, we are identifying identifying important analytical themes that we are also keeping track of in a table that allows us to look across the four contexts. So at this point, the important thing is that the cases that we're writing are not finished products. They are really part of the research process. In this first phase, we're particularly interested, as I said, in how elementary teachers describe the purposes and uses of Actually, in this very initial analysis, we're really trying to understand how they describe the uses of digital resources in their documentational work, and to what extent these uses provide opportunities for transformation of teaching and learning through the integration of digital resources. This second question is influenced by a conceptual review article by Birgit and Jeff and Kenneth and Natalie Sinclair, published in ZDM last summer. Among other things, they explore what is known about the potential of digital curriculum resources to transform teaching and learning. So we were kind of interested in thinking about this particular issue. So across the four settings, now I'm going to talk briefly about just two initial findings. Across the four settings, teachers describe using a variety, in some cases a large variety, of digital resources in diverse ways. There's some overlap in the types of resources being used across the four contexts, but we also see particular resources being taken up very differently and to different extents and for different purposes. That's very, very, very general, but I think it's important. The difference, I think, is important. When focusing on these differences, we see that how teachers describe using digital resources offer insight into the broader educational policy environment and how they're managing it. First, it appears that in many cases, teachers actively appropriate digital resources to respond to new curricular and pedagogical initiatives. And second, teachers access these resources from different places. So we think this might tell us something about the resource system in general. We also are seeing a striking similarity across all contexts, and that is the way increased digital resources impacts teachers' professional work practices. So I'm going to describe the first, which is thinking about the relationship between teachers' use of digital resources and the broader policy context in which they work. In a very sort of brief, very brief way. So I'm going to use an example from Sweden and an example from the United States. So in Sweden, there is a nationwide professional development initiative, which is translated to Boost in Mathematics. And the primary aim of this initiative is to shift the instructional routines that teachers typically use. In Sweden, traditionally teachers do a short introduction and then students spend time working either individually or in groups through their textbook. And this model tries to flip that. It asks students to work individually on a task first and then share their work in pairs and then have a whole class discussion, a whole class session that really focuses on student work rather than the teacher introducing a concept. And this, from what we can tell, that this is really being emphasized across Sweden, and there's a lot of professional development and a lot of online resources for teachers to use in responding to this initiative. So teachers report to us finding appropriate tasks in the part where you start by giving students a task to work on individually. They report finding appropriate tasks online rather than in their textbooks, and using classroom technology to facilitate the process of sharing student work. So one teacher, this is obviously translated, said, "I post some of the results that we received during the lesson on the document camera, and then we discuss these solutions by asking, for instance, how has this person thought? I photograph some of the results every time the students love this. They all want to contribute to the contribute their solutions to be posted on the board. So an example from the US context, in the United States, the Common Core Standards in Mathematics, among many other things, emphasize visual models, sort of new visual models to the United States, many adopted from the Singapore curriculum. These include bar models and number lines. These are new to a lot of elementary teachers in the United States. So, and they're in the curriculum materials, but because they're unfamiliar with teachers, they're feeling uncertain. Teachers reported feeling uncertain about how to use them. So teachers report to us finding videos online that are from both their primary resource, but also elsewhere, just sort of Googling resources or sharing with other teachers resources online, to educate themselves and about the use of these tools, but then also to use them in their presentations to students. So one example from a teacher in the US says, when I get to a point where I'm really struggling with visuals, I go to Zern, which is a platform that has a lot of video resources. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. I love the way they have their visuals laid out and how you can add, the way they make it interactive. I'll just Google it, and there's this other website, LearnZillion. I always find videos. So two examples of how teachers are drawing on video or on digital resources to help them navigate new policy, some new policy initiatives. A second finding that was across the board, we are hearing that digital and connected tools are changing teachers' professional practices in a number of ways that go beyond typical documentational work. Primarily, they're allowing teachers to collaborate with other teachers through file sharing shared document resources. In many places, these collective practices are less common among elementary teachers than secondary teachers. Teachers describe this kind of sharing as being relatively new. They're able to use back-end analytics to monitor student progress on computer-based practice systems, and they use email or web portals to communicate with parents much more frequently than in the past. And some teachers described finding online, like the one from the US, online videos to enhance their own understanding of the mathematics or the teaching approaches in their core curriculum. So many of these shifts are positive, but the main thing I want to point out is that these shifts are possibly changing and adding to what teaching involves, or what the work of teaching involves. And I was struck listening to Kenneth yesterday. This is not an exact quote because I wrote it down as quickly as I could, but essentially, online resources not only shift the nature of teachers' work, but increase the workload of teachers as well. And so teachers are doing new things because of the vast array of resources at their fingertips. So a few concluding thoughts, and then I'm eager to hear what folks have to say. The documentational approach has broad cross-cultural possibilities as an analytical framework, even though what it looks like within particular contexts varies substantially. I know you only got a little glimpse of our data, but that is definitely what we're finding. The documentation approach is particularly well suited to characterizing teachers' work in the current internet era, where they are navigating multiple resources to design their plans. And then this other piece that I think is interesting for us to think about, teachers' work is being transformed through the available resources in ways that go beyond the lens of the documentational approach. I think the kinds of additional work that teachers are finding themselves doing are things that, as researchers, we also need to continue to think about what is being done and what is not being done, or what is being replaced, what's being left aside as newer practices find their way into teachers' workloads. So with that, I will conclude and thank you for your attention, and I'm eager to take questions or comments.